It's not our first time to meet. We have the opportunity to share some point of view yesterday with the present, and I know two things about you. You are a distinguished speaker of the house, but you have a fantastic way of speaking languages. Latin, I suppose, and the Portuguese one. So, Mr. Speaker, I would like to introduce my delegation. On my left side, I have the Socialist Party, the ruling one, my vice-president, former member of government, Mr. Joana Lima, member of Socialist Party, Matilde Sousa Franco, and Helena Rodrigues, as well Socialist. So, they are seated in my left wing, and in fact, they are my left wing. On my right side, the Social Democratic Party, former member of government in terms of Portuguese communities, state secretary, and the representative of the Conservative Party, CDS-PP. So, Mr. Chairman, I know you have lots of things to share with you. Yesterday we have talked about Kosovo, Afghanistan. Je sais très bien quelle est votre cette aussi attirée pour les questions de santé. On a parlé hier de l'euthanasie, aussi bien que les questions de transport. Je ne sais pas si on a des experts dans ce domaine, mais en tout cas, j'espère qu'on puisse avoir un entretien très attirant. Il n'y a pas de fado dans cette salle-là, mais peut-être qu'il y a des livres que vous connaissez très bien. Je suis en train de dire que peut-être ici il y aura un seul, peut-être, Summa Theologica, que vous connaissez très bien. Eh bien, Monsieur le Président, ça a été pour nous un plaisir et j'espère qu'on puisse partager des expériences de vie et des expériences positives avec vous. Merci.
Obrigado, Señor Presidente. De la Comisión de Affaires Exteriores, ¿no? Sí. I will continue in English and introduce my distinguished colleague, Senator Carstairs, who has had real in-depth experience in Canadian politics, both as the leader of the opposition in the province of Manitoba, and then at the national level in the Parliament of Canada, leader of the government in the Senate, and therefore a member of the cabinet. And on my right, immediate right, is our Chargé d'Affaires at our embassy in Lisboa. And we're delighted that our new ambassador is with us as she's beginning her mandate in this lovely, lovely city. I'm very jealous of her. John Carstairs, who has had great experience in the oil sector and international business, knowing Western Canada, like Alberta, both Manitoba. On Senator Carstairs' left, my chief of staff, Janelle Feldstein, and her left, from our international and Interparliamentary Affairs Division, as well as John's prior right. We believe that interparliamentary contacts, as I call parliamentary diplomacy, is a very important part of dialogue among nations. This is not to be critical of the dialogue that goes on between the executive authorities of our respective countries. But parliamentarians, we speak, well, by definition, being parliamentarians, we like to speak. And indeed, I often say, even though in English they say the word we use for the président de l'Assemblée is speaker, they really don't want the speaker to speak too much. So, I, so so I have to leave the country to be able to speak. We think that there's a lot of international issues that parliamentarians meeting and discussing at our, given our responsibilities, which is in part to hold the government or the executive to account, but equally we have more freedom to test ideas and maybe identify new kind of creative political processes that would help resolve some of the challenging issues in the world. So I'm going to just start with the issue of NATO, because Portugal is a very important player in NATO. We do many military things together, Canada with NATO. We use your wonderful archipelago, the abilities often. I was speaking 10 days ago with the commanding officer of the HMCS Fredericton, who had just refueled in the Azores. I'd be interested in your thinking and what role the parliamentarians play in assessing the new membership applications coming from Croatia, Albania, Macedonia, and then, as we mentioned yesterday when you were present, the kind of thinking that's going on in this parliament about Afghanistan, where we work collectively. And have you been reflecting on that?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you know, we are founders member of NATO many years ago. At the time, we here in Portugal were not a democracy, but a dictatorship. Anyhow, the geographical situation in geopolitical terms of the North Atlantic endorses the invitation to NATO become member of Portugal to become a member of NATO. We have an engagement, as you know, in Kosovo and in Afghanistan. Many people say that 2007 will be the year of Kosovo. And why? Because, nevertheless, the efforts of the United Nations, as you know, in 2005, the Secretary General has appointed Mr. Afisari, former Finnish president, to be his special envoy. We became, this year, with a momentum, and the momentum is that I guess we are going to have an unilateral declaration of independence of Kosovo, in spite of the opposition of Serbs, in spite of the opposition of Belgrade, and in spite of we have, can't have the common position among the United Nations Security Council. As you know, you have a resolution, 1244, and that resolution has given a mandate to Mr. Afisari. But I guess in December we will have a problem, and I guess a problem to Portuguese presidency, and I guess a problem to the community, the national community. I don't think that will be till the 18 military terms. I have no idea at all of that. But it represents the precedent. And if you think about Kharkiv, if you think about Nagorno-Karabakh, if you think about Ossetia, if you think about Transnistria, what is going to happen? Are we going to change all the frontiers that we activated after the Cold War? I don't know. That is my point, I guess. Portugal has no problems in affirming support of the declaration of Kosovo. But I see some countries in the European Union that have a more soft position. I'm thinking in Spain, Romania, Greece, Cyprus. We they have normally very good ties with Belgrade, so that's in history speaking. Du point de vue de l'Afghanistan, les choses sont tout d'abord je crois qu'on n'a pas la chance d'obtenir une victoire éclair du point de vue militaire. On a pas mal de 30 000 hommes en Afghanistan. L'effort du Canada, c'est un très grand effort. On avait, je crois, 2000, plus de 2000 hommes là-bas. Donc, les choses sont en train de... Le président Karzai a été élu, comme vous le savez. Une situation de stabilisation dans le Téhéran a été terrible, surtout dans le sud du pays. Il y a un problème entre les zones frontalières avec le Pakistan. Ils sont en train de construire un sanctuaire pour les talibans, et ça veut dire du terrorisme partout. Je crois qu'on ne peut pas déployer plus d'hommes. Ce n'est pas une question seulement militaire, c'est une question d'autant plus politique. C'est-à-dire le développement économique, la constitution des zones de coopération régionale et entamer une lutte très, très fière contre la drogue. C'est un problème, vous savez, notamment mondial. Mais en Afghanistan, il y a un poids très lourd. On vient de discuter tout cela dans l'Assemblée parlementaire de l'OTAN. Il y a un rapporteur canadien, André Chuck. Je crois que 2007 et 2008 seront des années difficiles pour le plan parce qu'on ne peut pas échouer dans le cas de l'Afrique.
I wonder if just to comment on the first file, Kosovo. Given that Portugal is in a wonderful position in the presidency of the EU right now, we only have 5 or 6 weeks until those who are taking the recommendations of Arturi a certain way. Do you think that Portugal might be able to encourage maybe a committee of senior parliamentarians from a number of countries who have that special interest in Kosovo to be sort of a parliamentary committee of eminent parliamentarians to revisit the entire file to provide for more, a little bit more time?
As you know, now you have a troika, Russian, member of in the European Union. They have hard working job to do. I don't know if they achieve before the 10th of December, that's the final date. The President of Israel sent some recommendations to the United Nations Security Council. I don't know, I think we can open windows one after one, another. So I don't see nothing against it. But at the present moment, I think it will be difficult. I think you, Mr. Speaker, I think you go to Russia and speak to some officials there, some politicians there, so you can open that thing out there, because Russia is a supporter of the Belgrade position. So, as you have said, parliamentary diplomacy sometimes works better than governmental. Why not?
The paradox, there are many paradoxes, but one of the paradoxes is that December the 10th happens to be Human Rights Day. And if there ever was a contemporary challenge to human rights, it's Kosovo. And the mismanagement of Kosovo could have very bad consequences. I will leave you with this thought. As you can appreciate living in Lisboa, there are many inscriptions on the old walls. So also in Rome, there are many inscriptions on the monuments And my favorite inscription are three words that say, tempora, tempere, tempore. That one needs to time one's time timely. And one model of analysis about Kosovo is time. And if we as parliamentarians are able to be helpful. I will tell you, I will raise, intend to raise with President Medanov, who is the president of the House of the Federation. But I would be very, I would find it very helpful if I have your permission to say we've had this parliamentary discussion, and if there is a ways that he thinks that parliamentarians might do something to help with the time, not the model. I think Dr. Suri's analysis and the Troika's work. Do I have your permission to say yes? Parliamentarians of all political persuasions are equally preoccupied or concerned that Kosovo, that the right decisions are made at the right time.
I can convince the President that time is one of the... time is one of the things we don't have in Kosovo. I guess. Because, as you know, Albanians from Kosovo say, and I must quote them, that time is ruling against them. And that's the problem. Because we came to that discussion and we asked time for Albanians, they say, well, we are waiting for so long. But as I told you before, you go to Russia, you are going to have some negotiations with officials there, so open the window. Open it and let us see what they are going to say. But I like to open the floor in my committee to share some points of view on behalf of government and on behalf of other parties of the opposition. I will give the floor to my first president from the Socialist Party.
First of all, welcome, of course. I was able to see you yesterday when you visited the Senate, and we were in the budget discussion. Of course, we tend to be very cautious about Kosovo, because we realize it's a very difficult issue. And we realize that time will be very good for us to think about this problem. So for us, it's part of our strategic contribution not to have a bad solution. But, of course, it's not easy. We realize that we must take care of this, of what is happening. But I tend to agree with you that maybe having some other solution, like a forum of senior parliamentarians, can bring some new hope. Because at the moment, I think that people see no hope, because the only solution that has been put on the floor, we can doubt that it's really a solution for anything. So I tend to be very, very cautious, much more than he is, because we are in the government now. So we know it's not easy, just straightforward. Things are not like that. Of course, Portugal has no particular interest in this field, but as president of the European Community, I think we will not tend to precipitate things. But of course, everything is not in our hands. And we know it's a very, very difficult issue. But of course, knowing that it can be a precedent for the whole Balkan region and Georgia and all this region seems to us to be a very difficult, because we have there a lot of intentions that are very important for Europe. So I tend to agree with you that tending another time solution can be a good advice.
Thank you, Mrs. Lisbon. Let me say only a word. When I remember Kosovo and that question, I always have in mind the sentence of Mark Twain. He said, if you don't know what to do, do the right thing. That's the point we have now. And what is the right thing? It's to make diplomacy move ahead, bargain some time. But as I've started, 2007 will be a year from Kosovo to solve the will of independence. As you've mentioned, the 10th of December is a date, an important one. And we can't solve the Kosovo problem. We can't solve the Kosovo problem without seeing the questions of minorities. Because we have several areas of self-populated people, and we have to stand them there, not to make some changes of it. But that's right. I think you have many interests in other subjects. If you want to give the floor to quelqu'un d'autre personne dans votre délégation, ça serait pour moi un plaisir.
Just before we leave that topic, as you mentioned, the Serb minority in Kosovo, Portugal has, as I understand it, a good relation with the Orthodox Church. And is that an area of civil society that can be utilized in both the analysis and in the identification of a process where civil society becomes more engaged than it has been to date? We will meet with your patriarch tomorrow.
Yeah, I know that because I'm going to say, as you know that I'm speaking in personal name, I'm a Catholic, and as a Catholic I am. I have a vision of ecumenism, so that's important, and the Pope has mentioned in length a dialogue between all of Christianity, of course the Orthodox Church is important, but we don't have a particular link with the Orthodox Church, nevertheless, the importance of Ukrainians in Portugal.
Isn't particularly in reference to Kosovo, but what I think we are experiencing at the IPU, where I chair the Human Rights Committee, is that countries are not taking into consideration violations against parliamentarians when they're making decisions about those countries. Turkey, for example. Turkey wants eventually to have membership in the EU. But eventually, somebody has to examine their rights with respect and their practices with respect to the parliamentarians in their own country. And if they don't respect the rights of the parliamentarians in their own country, then I think the question other parliamentarians ask is, do we want them as part of the new parliamentary body? Because the fundamental protection of the human rights of parliamentarians has to be paramount. And if they cannot protect their own, then what influence is that going to have on a broader political and parliamentary group?
Thank you very much. That raises me another question. how can we introduce Serbia and Kosovo in the new Euro-Atlantic organization? Can we become members of NATO? Can we become members of EU? How can we do it? And how can we do it respecting the parliamentary views? I agree with you totally.
I think it's a very complex issue, and it's not one that I don't think we've turned our attention to. It was not enough to welcome countries into new parliamentary institutions without giving them some education as to what we expect from them with respect to the parliamentary institution. We don't even do that enough in Canada when we welcome new members of parliament, new members of the Senate, and teach them what are their rights and responsibilities, not as representatives of their constituents, but as representatives of the concept of parliament. And it's an area that I think we all need to explore, because it's, we just have an incident going on in Canada right now. There's going to be an economic statement. It's not going to be in parliament, because one political group has decided that, no, it shouldn't be in parliament. And I don't think anybody has even looked at what that says about parliament. Now, forget your own political objectives for a moment. What does it say about parliament when an economic statement for the entire nation isn't going to be made in the Houses of Parliament? So we tend to not, I think, respect what it is we are as parliamentarians. And that's beyond our role as constituency representatives and as duly elected or appointed as we may be representatives of the people.
Concluding this question, that's very interesting, but in terms of Canadian people, military troops you have there in Afghanistan, for instance, you have many casualties. How is the opinion, public opinion views in that, and the parliamentarians, and even those of you who are very interested in human rights?
Well, thank you very much, and thank you for recognizing the tragic loss that Canada has experienced to date, with 72 of our people having lost their lives in Afghanistan. The Parliament of Canada accepted the proposition of the former government that Canada would participate as part under the UN mandate in the NATO commitment, and we will meet our commitment, which ends on in February of 2009, and the Parliament of Canada will have another debate as to what our policy and position should be after February of 2009. About 2 weeks ago, the Prime Minister established a special committee of eminent persons chaired by a former Minister of External Affairs who is has a lot of experience, not only as Minister of Foreign Affairs but in government, and in the understanding of the machinery of government, very, very bright man, and a number of other leading Canadians. They will provide some of the objective fodder for what will be a serious debate. I never like to speak as a prophet. I prefer the cowardly way and speak as a historian as to outcome. With the loss of 72 of our people, out of a contingent of 2,400. That is a very high ratio. there are many other countries that have a larger contingent with very, very low casualties. And that speaks to the area that the Netherlands and the United Kingdom, Canada, and the United States find themselves in that part of the country. as one parliamentarian, I think it's important for us to learn from the countries in the immediate neighborhood. We did have the president of the Senate of Pakistan visit us in Canada. We'd like to learn from the senior parliamentarians from India. We have a very good relationship with certainly the ambassador from China. We need to have an understanding of the contribution for stability in that region that Iran can make. And then the Northern Alliance has a special dynamic as well. But the immediate responsibility that, in my opinion, that has to be met has to come from those in the immediate neighborhood. Portugal and Canada, this is not our neighborhood. But Portugal is making a major contribution for as part of the NATO effort. So I think that what we can learn through your political analysis and processes, and each month it's almost, there's new information. Now, we had President Karzai speak to a joint session of the House of Commons and Senate of Canada about a year and a half ago. He recognized the major problem he has with the poppy. And he said, either we destroy the poppies or the poppy will destroy us. And I believe that'll remain true today. Not so much because of the poppy itself, but rather because how that feeds the non-state actors. And I think we have to identify the way in which we can engage in serious dialogue with non-state actors, many of whom have larger budgets than half the members of the member states of the United Nations. And that includes the international drug cartels, the international criminal groups, some international global corporations, and obviously international terrorist organizations. In the post-Westphalian order, where we've gone from state sovereignty to recognizing that in the world of today, international law has transcended individual state sovereignty, but there is a rule of law in the international interstate order. What's lacking, of course, is no rule of law that affects the non-state actors, and we have to become creative in coming to terms with how we deal as democracies with these powerful, very powerful non-state actors. You know, the issue of the opium and the poppies is just a clear example of how the non-state actors have tremendous financial resources. So.
Ça c'est vrai. Dans le cas de l'Afghanistan, le problème c'est que on a obtenu des résultats. C'est positif dans la construction de l'armée. Ce n'est pas le cas dans la construction de la police. Ce sont les Allemands qui ont fait une preuve de grande fierté pour parvenir à monter la police afghane, mais c'est surtout parce qu'il y a de la corruption au sein du ministère des Affaires intérieures. Et là, je me souviens de vos paroles sur les questions des agents non gouvernementaux. Dans le cadre des cartels, et ça c'est vraiment parce qu'ils travaillent, non rule of law. Et ça c'est le problème. Comment édifier une compétence juridictionnelle, administrative dans un pays quartier entouré par le royaume de guerre. Donc ça, c'est vraiment un cas difficile. Je ne sais pas si là des collègues qui vont entendre ce cas-là. Sur d'autres cas, hein. Il y a d'autres choses. Ah bon.
Il y a quoi? Il y a un mois qui est en Afghanistan. Ils ont utilisé le peine capitale contre, je pense, il y a 15 Afghans. Alors, venant d'un pays où la peine de mort était abolie il y a 50 années, et aussi venant d'un pays qui accepte le deuxième protocole pour le Pacte international des droits civils et politiques contre la peine capitale, ça impose une certaine difficulté au niveau politique. On a d'abord, pourquoi nous sommes là? Si un des Nouvelles-Aires canadiens sont contre la peine de mort, si nous avons une certaine philosophie de la valeur de la vie, aussi la vie d'une qui fait des choses si mauvaises. Et nous sommes là, jusqu'à maintenant, malheureusement, avec des tragédies, des pertes de 72 de nos soldats, dans un pays où nous imposons une peine pénale comme ça. Il nous donne, au moins dans le débat, un débat qui doit encourager tous les Canadiens et Canadiennes d'accepter notre rôle là-bas. Alors, il y a un danger qui, avec, en ce sens-là, sera peut-être plus facile pour nous de dire, bon, nous avons fait nos efforts d'un point de vue militaire, et nous allons nous concentrer sur l'aide internationale pour le développement des écoles, des hôpitaux, etc., et pas militairement. Et si nous faisons une décision comme ça, ça veut dire que les autres pays dans l'OTAN seront sur la ligne, si on veut continuer avec cette voie d'action militaire.
C'est vraiment difficile aux démocraties de faire face, de combattre le terrorisme sans effacer les questions éthiques et les questions des droits de l'homme. Appartient à notre patrimoine commun. Ça serait pas facile à, évaluer, mais c'est pas toujours le cas dans le monde étatique, comme vous venez de dire.
Un autre dossier complètement différent, Monsieur le Président, était une discussion qui touche nos législateurs comme le vôtre. Par exemple, dans le domaine des relations entre les Canadiens d'origine portugaise et aussi les gens qui veulent faire des investissements, les Portugais au Canada, les Canadiens ici en Portugal, il y a certains des obstacles qui confondent les Portugais, disons les Canadiens d'origine portugaise qui veulent retourner ici et veulent avoir protection contre la double taxation, d'utiliser les bénéfices sociaux, comme pension, comme santé, etc. N'importe s'ils se trouvent au Canada ou s'ils se trouvent ici. Et je me demande si vous et vos collègues ont l'intérêt de moderniser un peu les traités entre Canada et Portugal. Qui touche nos responsabilités comme parlementaires canadiens et parlementaires portugais.
Merci, M. le Président, d'avoir partagé avec nous votre intérêt. Je crois qu'il y a des experts chez nous. Il y a des députés qui sont élus. Donc, je passe la parole à M. Kaj Gonsorf, député du Parti social-démocrate.
Merci, M. le Président. Je voudrais, M. le Président, vous saluer et toute votre délégation. Et c'est vrai qu'il y a beaucoup de relations, beaucoup d'objectifs communs entre nos deux pays. C'est vrai aussi que la plus forte relation, c'est entre les Portugais qui vivent au Canada ou les Canadiens qui sont d'origine portugaise. La question que vous avez posée, elle touche aussi d'autres communautés portugaises dans d'autres pays. Et c'est vrai que notre Parlement, depuis plusieurs décennies, travaille dans les accords entre les divers pays qui accueillent nos communautés pour résoudre ces genres de questions. Et c'est vrai que cette commission et les députés des différents groupes parlementaires sont ouverts à débattre et à traiter cette question, qui est dans l'intérêt peut-être du Canada, mais surtout du Portugal, parce que nous voulons bien sûr garder nos relations avec nos citoyens qui vivent dans votre pays. Beaucoup d'eux sont déjà canadiens, mais encore un petit peu, une partie du cœur, son cœur, qui est portugais. C'est vrai aussi que nous avons, depuis quelques années, plusieurs questions qui touchent nos communautés qui vivent sur votre pays, qui ont obligé cette commission à travailler dessus. C'est par exemple la question des récents immigrés portugais en situation illégale. On a été obligé de traiter cette question dans cette commission. On a même parlé avec, à l'époque, M. l'ambassadeur du Canada. Là, c'est une question qui nous touche et qui nous avons accompagné au sein de cette commission des affaires étrangères. Mais sinon, sur cette question des Portugais qui vivent sur votre pays, nous serons toujours ouverts à travailler avec vous et pourquoi pas trouver une entente pour que cette question qui est sûrement, qui cause beaucoup d'ennuis, puisse aussi compenser un manque d'investissement souvent des Portugais et du Canada sur notre pays qui pourrait être beaucoup plus élevé si cet accord avait déjà été signé. Donc notre part, mon groupe parlementaire, mais je pense que toute la commission, nous sommes ouverts, bien sûr, à traiter cette question.
Obrigado, thank you very much, and I would just like to say that the Deputy and former Secretary of State for Portuguese Communities has stated that we have a mutual interest in working together to ensure that the relations between our two countries flourish, and we are particularly appreciative, of course, in Canada of the enormous contribution that the Portuguese Canadian community in our country has made to the life of our country over many, many years, and well, very well-established community in most cases. We continue to be open, of course, to working on issues that arise from time to time, as was the case, as you mentioned, a couple of years ago, when the issue of some individuals resident in Canada who had become an illegal situation in Canada were requested and forced to leave our country, but I think we've made a lot of progress in that area since then, and relations have developed in that area as they do in all areas with Portugal, and toward greater mutual understanding. It's very interesting, if I could just touch for a moment, President Chairman, on the issue of trade relations and investment issues, for example. We have a long-standing interest in concluding an agreement with the European Union, which would encompass most of those issues and provide for what we think is a very bad improvement with all member states in terms of commerce and investment. We are currently committed with the European Union to the conduct of an economic study towards the viability of the trade agreement. We hope to see that work completed in a timely manner so that it may be considered at the next Canada-EU summit and that it will provide the basis for a very substantial development of our trade and investment relations with the European Union and with all of the member states. And I would like to thank you very much for raising that issue, which is a very considerable importance to the government of Canada.
Okay, thank you very much. It was a pleasure to have you, all of you here. I know you have a nice conversation this afternoon. I think we're going to meet at lunch the friendship group. And as a gesture of friendship, I'd like to give you a gift. It's not Fado. But it's not all, it's not Celine Dion also, but I believe this is a gesture that friendship between the Parliamentary of Portugal and you, Mr. Speaker. Okay.
Come and visit us in Canada. We welcome you at any time. writers don't come in January, too cold. But any other time of the year, first, the Wicked Governor's